It sucks. That's how I feel about it. Little conversation, little pre-conversation going on.
I agree.
Before
with you,
the audible,
Paul.
Right?
I agree
exactly.
With you.
You'd suck if you knew too, but you just don't know what we're talking
about.
We'll
fill them in later.
You know, man, maybe we'll fill you in later. Depends on how the show goes. But I can tell you this: Kimbo Camper, John Congemi with you in the audible here on this Wednesday. John, you know, I kind of had a hangdog day today.
Yeah.
I had stuff going at the house. It was a mess, and I had to run up to Fort Lauderdale for something, and got caught in traffic and the whole thing. Just having one of those days that, you know, everything is just crappy. Then I walked in here and I saw something. All of a sudden, I just had a smile from ear to ear.
I think I know what it is.
Logan got a haircut, man. For the first one. Logan, when was the last time you got a haircut? Before we went to London. Before we went to London. So that's almost.
Years ago.
Is that 6 months? That's almost 6 months, right? Maybe not 6 months. Yeah, pretty close. 4.5, 5 months.
Imagine that poor.
No, he said.
Cutting his hair.
No, but he said before we went. Oh, so you got it the week before we went to London. Okay.
It was a lot of work.
It was a lot of work. It was getting a little, it was getting a little shaggy there, I can tell you that.
That would be the equivalent of somebody leaving a home unattended with no lawn care and then coming back 6 months later.
That would be like Leon being here for four straight shows.
Or on time.
Is what it would be like.
Or be on time.
Or be on time for four straight shows. Very, very similar,
description of something.
Yes, give you some information that really means something.
Yeah.
You know, not that information when you start to say it and he starts going.
We asked him to Google couple things today.
Yeah,
he gave us that blank stare that we normally get from.
How do you get on? How do you get on Google? Anyway, let's get to the task at hand.
He always wants us to move on. When we
I know. Whenever you mention Logan, whenever you mention Leon, he goes, "Come on, let's get going. Move on." I've heard it. I've heard it all before. I've heard that whole thing. The reason I'm kind of dragging on is because we got nothing to talk about today, John. To be honest with you, I mean, look, we're here. It's Wednesday. You know, there's games coming up on this weekend. Both games are on Sunday this week, right?
Yes, which is nice.
I used to think they used to. I think they
used to stagger.
I think at one time they used to play one on Saturday, one on Sunday, because I think maybe 1 year we went to the Super Bowl, we won on Saturday and we had to wait until
to
Sunday to see who we were going to play. I think.
We've got a 3:05 and a 6:40 this week. So
a mid-afternoon and a late one.
Jacksonville, New England early, and then Minnesota, Philly late.
And pretty good matchups there. And John, the funny thing about these games this week, Jacksonville's at New England. But I tell you, watching Jacksonville's defense – I think it's going to be a pretty interesting matchup between those two, what they can do. If they can put pressure on Tom Brady, which they certainly have the capability of doing, that could be a very interesting game. And then Minnesota and Philadelphia. Minnesota, I think, with a very realistic chance of being the first team to play a home game
in
the Super Bowl. I think it would be cool, too. And I saw this the other day that if they do win the game and go to the Super Bowl, they'll be the visiting team.
Oh, really?
I wonder if they've got to. Wonder if they got to relocate out of their locker room
and go
into the visitors' locker room. I would assume so, right? Yeah, but at least they would be there at home. So anyway, I'm expecting a good thing. But the interesting thing, John, about these games this weekend is, you know, we've talked for a long time, and the talk about this league for a long time has been, hey, you can't win unless you got a great quarterback. You got to have the great quarterback to get there. You look at Tom Brady, Foles, Bortles, and Case Keenum are your quarterbacks. So three guys who I would call quasi-journeyman guys. And then you got maybe the greatest quarterback to ever play the game in Tom Brady. So it kind of crashes that theory that you've got to have a great, great quarterback to be able to win in this league and to get to a Super Bowl.
I think it might, but, you know, going into it, looking at the names, I would say you either have to have that elite quarterback or you better be not only pretty good, you better be very good around him.
Yep.
Meaning one side of the ball needs to be dominant, whether having athletes and having explosive players around those types of quarterbacks where you can run the football, you can win the turnover battle, you can put pressure on opposing quarterbacks. But I would think Tom Brady going into this, and the New England Patriots, quite frankly, they have to be laughing down deep inside, because if you had told them at the beginning of the year that you would have to defeat the Tennessee Titans at home and then defeat the Jacksonville Jaguars at home to get to another Super Bowl to play either Philly or Minnesota, I think
they said, sign me up for that right now.
I'll take that 10 out of 10 times because, you know, the usual suspects aren't around.
Yep.
You know, the rematch with the Atlanta Falcons. Green Bay is nowhere to be found. Dallas Cowboys.
Pittsburgh Steelers.
Yeah, the Pittsburgh Steelers on that side are nowhere to be found. So eventually getting out of the AFC and then challenging the NFC, I think if you're New England, you've got it exactly the way you want it.
No, I don't think you could ask. If you're New England, you couldn't ask for a better situation. First of all, you had the bye week. You're playing at home. You got this game at home. And although of the two games, I got a feeling. I think Jacksonville is a team that could upset New England. I think just because, you know, and you talk about it, but if you don't have that elite quarterback, you better have some things around him. And you look at Jacksonville; they've got a great running game. They've got some pretty decent receivers. They've got a good offensive line, and they've got a hellacious defense that can put pressure on you, whether they rush four guys or whether they want to come and get exotic and throw some blitzes at you. They've got some good cover guys. They've got some good linebackers. They're a very, very good defensive football team. And the thing to me, I keep going back to the New York Giants when they were going for an undefeated season, New England was going for an undefeated season. And New York beat them by rushing four.
Right.
They had four defensive linemen.
They were able to affect
good
them.
Enough to run. Yeah. And at times, I think they had four defensive ends.
They did.
They'd stick in there.
They did.
So they could get there with four guys and let their cover guys cover with max coverage behind them. And they put pressure on Tom Brady. And that ultimately, I think, is what made a difference in the game. And I think if Jacksonville is going to win this game this weekend, I think that's what they've got to do. They've got to get pressure, be able to get their coverage back there, and not allow those underneath routes to go from a 5-yard gain or an 8-yard gain to a 35-yard gain.
I think Jacksonville has the talent defensively to do that. They can get after the quarterback.
Yep.
Their linebackers run really well.
Yep.
Miles Jack was running all over the place. He's a spectacular player. And then when you're talking about the secondary, they're young and they're aggressive on the corner. They do a lot of good things.
Yep.
So they have all the intangibles to match up with the New England Patriots. It's whether Tom Brady makes a couple of plays that other guys just can't make with third down conversions, or when you're going to see it at one time on Sunday, he's going to run for 5 yards. It's going to look like he ran for 50, but he's going to get 5 or 6 yards on a scramble on man coverage where he's able to escape, get a first down, and all of a sudden it changes the complexion of that drive or that game. But, Bo, you know, I was looking at some statistics today, and I don't know where it was, on Twitter. It might have been on NFL.com. I can't remember where it was. But in the 70s, in terms of percentage, these were the most important stats in terms of teams winning games. It was explosive plays, it was penalties, and it was turnover ratio. Those three things were ahead of scoring first in a game, having the lead at halftime, having the lead at the third quarter, getting so many first downs. Mm-hmm. But it was explosive plays, turnovers, and penalties were all 72% or above. Those traits on good teams carry you to victories. That's what the statistics are saying.
I think when you look at good teams over the course of you could go as many decades as you want and look at teams that have won championships or been to championship games or been to Super Bowls or won Super Bowls, you'd probably find them pretty high up in every one of those categories. I don't think there's any question about that. And you look internally to this football, the Dolphins.
Right.
And we were talking about on the show the other day, the easiest way – someone asked a question, now, what's the easiest way for the Dolphins to improve? And the first two things that came to my mind were penalties and turnovers. You know, cut down the turnovers, cut down the penalties, and you could be right there. But easy to say, not so – look, I say this, easy to say, easy to do, but your guys have to buy into it.
Right.
They've got to be committed to it, and it can't just be window dressing that, hey, we're going to cut down on penalties this year. You know, look, they've got officials out there every day watching them practice, and yet they still run into those issues. And it's certainly not they're not the only team in the league, but I can tell you this, all the other teams in the league that are close to them in penalties, they're all doing like what you and I are doing, sitting here going, hey, I wonder how the games are going to be this weekend.
That's right.
You know?
That's right. And because that cone, as you move along in the playoffs, the percentages and that margin for error gets so thin Pittsburgh found that out.
Yep.
You know, you don't make explosive. They made some explosive plays but on fourth down, but the normal play.
Well, but the other thing they did, though, they gave up explosive plays on the backside.
They gave up, exactly, yeah. Exactly. They gave up some big runs to Leonard Fournette.
Yeah, no doubt, and some passes down the field. They had one late in the game that really kind of put the nail in the coffin for them. But the other thing about the games that are interesting to me, I read a nice article today, and I've thought about this a lot during the course of the season, watching this Jacksonville turnaround. I mean, this is a team that had been in the doldrums. I know for probably the last 7 or 8 drafts, I know every time I've done it, it's like, hey, whoever goes to Jacksonville, you'll never hear from them again.
Yeah.
They're like going into the black hole if you go up to Jacksonville. Well, that's all turned around. And the article I read today, which I agree with, you know, wholeheartedly, is I think you see in one short year the influence of Tom Coughlin on that football team. I mean, this is a detail-oriented guy. This is a guy that looks at everything. The article I was reading was – I guess where they played, where were they at last week when they played? Were on the road or they were at home?
Who's that?
Jacksonville.
They're in Pittsburgh.
Yeah. So in Pittsburgh, the executives don't have their own box. So Coughlin is sitting up in the press box.
He was with Jeff
watching
with skinny
the game.
Jeans, wasn't he? Wasn't he right next to Skinny Jeans?
I think so.
Jeff Darlington?
I think he probably was. I mean,
yeah.
Like if he was up there, I'm sure Jeff wasn't very far.
No.
Very far away,
yeah.
No doubt. But we're talking about Tom Coughlin and how meticulous he was taking notes, and how even when they made plays, big plays, you'd see him knocking down and kind of have a little scowl on his face.
Right.
I mean, you know, look, okay, we made a good play, but I see this, I see this,
right.
And I see that, and we can do this better. And so I think that I really think the influence, because they've had some good players on that team for a while, and they've had a lot of high draft choices on that team for a while. And they really haven't done nothing with it. But I think the thing that congeals that team to me when I look at them right now is that hiring of Tom Coughlin, which I think was a great hire for those guys, and a huge, huge loss for the New York Giants.
And I think it's a blend, too. I think Tom – I don't disagree with that at all. I totally agree with what Tom Coughlin brings to the table, because he is that old-school mentality,
yep,
that it's good, but it can be better. It's not,
yes,
good enough. And there's a way to improve on that,
yep,
to get it closer to perfection. But I think his image and his personality marries well with Doug Marrone.
Yeah.
Because Doug Marrone is a former offensive lineman. This guy's an old-school center that played at Syracuse, that was a member of the Miami Dolphins at one point for,
yeah,
a very short time. But his mentality is toughness,
yeah,
and running the football. Don't you remember, I think it was this summer, all the griping coming out of the Jacksonville training camp about how rough it was,
yeah, well,
and how tough it was, and why are we going in pads when we can separate these days, because,
yeah,
you only get X amount of days, but we're in them again on back-to-back days and then back-to-back-to-back days.
Yeah.
Well, there's a reason for that, and that's you're going to play that way.
Yeah.
So you have to be able to prepare that way, and I think that relationship between head coach and director of football,
yep,
operations, or whatever Tom's title is, I think that's good, because you're getting one message,
yep,
one united message, that is a tough message, but,
yep,
it's the truth. And sometimes that's the hardest thing to hear,
yep,
that you need to be better, that this isn't good enough,
yep,
and this is how we're going to get there. And if you don't want to be here, find somewhere else,
yep,
to be.
I had a chance to meet Tom when he was at coaching at Boston College, and he's just a good guy. A family guy, but when it comes to football, he's a no-nonsense,
right,
no BS, you know, this is the way it's going to be. And that's a problem he had early up in Jacksonville when they were expansion team.
Right.
I remember when, like I told you, I'd met him the year before he took the job at a bowl game, I think the Orange Bowl, and I was in a box with Tom. And I probably sat and talked with him for, you know, an hour during the game or whatever. I had a really good conversation with him. And then not so long later, he gets hired to start the Jacksonville Jaguars. I was doing radio at the time. So I called up there, got his secretary, said, hey, my name's Kim Bocamp. I got a radio show down in Miami. Met Coach Coughlin at the Orange Bowl.
Want to know
if I could get him on the air for a show. She goes, well, let me check with him, and I'll give you a call back. So she called me back about an hour later. Now, granted, they had hired him. He had just started about maybe 3 weeks.
Right.
Although – they weren't going to play a football game for two years.
Years, right.
right? They had 1 year where they were, we weren't going to play a game, and then the next year.
So you figure he had some time on his
hands. So I'm thinking he had a little time, and, he, and she goes, no, no, no. He said, Kim, he remembers you. He enjoyed meeting you. He would love to speak to you, but he has no time right now. He's got a football team to get ready.
That's right. Well, but that's that mentality.
But that's that mentality.
That,
you know,
is it.
Every second he would give up, it would be too much for him because he's got stuff to do.
Right.
And I think, and when they put their team together and he started, if you remember, I mean, there was almost a mutiny there.
That's right.
Because he, you know, Tom Coughlin's an old military guy, and I remember going up to Jacksonville because a friend of mine was working up there. Going up there, and I walked by a wall, like a little wall where they had a little bulletin board, and he had all these military emblems on there, like that they were in their uniforms, right? All these different, riflemen, paratroopers, infantry, all the different things. So I said to my buddy, "Go, what are these?" I said, "What are all these for?" He goes, "Oh, that's what you get when if you make a big play.
Stars, these decals on your helmet.
He gives you the military thing.
Yeah.
Along with that came the rule that in the meetings, you need to have both feet on your ground, both feet on the ground at the same time.
Back up, right.
Back and back. No hats.
Right.
No glasses. And just no phone, no nothing.
Right.
And it was like that from day one to, and really there was a mutiny there. But I mean, look, within a couple of years they were in an AFC championship. I forget if they were in the NFC or AFC at that time, whatever they're in. But they were in a championship game, and so that's kind of the way he goes about it. And I think you can see that imprint of Tom Coughlin really over that team through the coach.
Well, whatever they're doing, it's working, and they did a really good job in free agency. They get a dominant defensive player in Campbell up front.
Yep.
They get a talented running back in the draft. They've got really good wide receivers. They've got excellent offensive line play.
Yep.
Brandon Leonard from St. Thomas and UM, the highest paid center, I think, in the league, was dominating the defensive front. And I'm talking about moving people against their will, along with their other four offensive linemen. And then we talked about their defense, how well they run, how well they cover, and how physical the linebackers are.
Yep.
If they miss or if they misstep, they're so quick that they're back on track being able to affect the play.
Yeah, no doubt. So, yeah, it's been interesting to see how that team's turned around. I just said, because I read that article, I just thought it was so interesting.
Well, how about this? I texted Doug Marrone after the game, the head coach of the Jaguars, just to say congratulations and good luck, and we're going to hope you kick their butts, whatever. And I could have said, you guys look like horseshit. You guys were terrible.
Right.
You guys, and he was going to text thanks no matter what I said because it was probably already on the phone. Whoever texted me, thanks.
Right.
Thanks.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Thanks, But it probably pained him to do it, but it was one of those things where I didn't think they had a chance to go up into Pittsburgh and take a lead like they did.
Right.
But it goes back to the stuff you had in the article. It goes back to the way that the mentality of that team feels like that. That's a great feeling to have, that you're going to go into places with a chance to win.
And it kind of touched a nerve with me from the standpoint that, and you touched on a little bit here, John, was that, during my career, and again, I always preface it saying, look, I played for one coach, so I've got a skewed, thought of NFL coaches and how they go about their business. But I know this under Coach Shula, if we could go play a game, we could go win a game. We could win a game by 14 points and walk in that locker room and get our asses ripped because we didn't play well enough. You guys were much better than that football team. You didn't do this. But that's what it takes. That's what it takes to be a perfectionist. I mean, we played in the Super Bowl. We lost to the Washington Redskins, first time I'd been to a Super Bowl. And you kind of expect after it, which is a gut-wrenching thing to lose a Super Bowl, I've said time and time again, I would rather not have gone to a Super Bowl
than to
lose a Super Bowl, because it just rips the guts out of you. So you kind of walk in the locker room after the game and you half expect, hey, guys, it's been a good season. You got close. Man, we sat there for a half hour and he just ripped our ass. You guys had a chance to be world champions out there and you pissed up a rope and blah, blah, and on. And you're sitting there going, Jesus Christ, we just got our ass kicked out there.
Now I'm getting my ass kicked. I feel bad enough already.
And then the next year, the first day of training camp,
get
I told
it again?
Sam. No, the very first day of training camp, the very first thing he did, he stood at the podium, shut out the lights, turn the projector on, and we watched the game.
Oh, man. That's the worst. Coach Sula was.
But you know what? Again, I've always said he was a very, very tough coach to play for. But when you look back at it, you stacked up a lot of wins and had a lot of success. And you say thank you. And got out there. Yeah, you're darn right.
Yeah, you say thank you.
It wasn't a whole lot of fun when we were doing it.
But I know why he was doing it.
But you know why he was doing it. And that kind of – all of that kind of goes into the – the other thing about Tom Coughlin that popped in my mind when we were talking about – you know who Tom Coughlin played with at Syracuse?
No.
Larry Zonka. He was on the same team with Zonk. They used to ride. Zonk lived in Ohio. Tom Coughlin, I think, lived somewhere in Ohio. And they used to, every year they would drive to Syracuse and back together
great.
Whenever they were going, you know, going to for training camp or coming back for Thanksgiving or whatever.
Right.
And I said, well, how was Tom back then? He says, same son of a bitch he is right now.
That's good.
Yeah.
See, guys don't change. Yeah, he knows what he is, and consistency pays off.
All right, let's kind of get to some business here. That took up some good time.
Yeah, I think the show's going pretty well. Leon's sleeping, but, I mean, other than that, Logan's hair is starting to grow out from our show,
Leon,
I think.
I said something, and Leon was all
saying, he snapped back. I thought you have a brace on Friday.
Put a brace around his neck. Yeah, no doubt about it. Hey, so there's some reports out there of some more changes to the coaching staff. Danny Barrett. Earlier in the week, it was Lou Anaramo and Terrell Williams, the defensive back and defensive line coach, that didn't have their contracts renewed. Danny Barrett has since been released. Clyde Christensen, the offensive coordinator, has been reassigned. He's not the offensive coordinator anymore, but he's been reassigned. Not sure what his position is going to be. Daryl Loggins came from Chicago. Will take his place as the offensive coordinator. Jeremiah Washburn came in. He'll take over the offensive line. He was here 2 years ago.
Right.
And the son of Jim Washburn, who was here last year as the Dolphins defensive line coach. Eric Studsville from Denver. Looks like he's going to be the guy that's going to come in and take over that running back position for Danny Barrett. And then Chris Kosorik is the defensive line coach from Detroit,
right?
That's going to come down. He worked with Sue up there, so I think that connection with Sue, because I know Sue was very close with Terrell Williams, and so I think it's nice to have somebody there that he's got a relationship with that can get you going there. So those are the changes to the coaching staff. None of it's been official. There hasn't been a press release
from the team
given out. So, but that's the news that's out there, and I'm sure that'll all come to fruition at some point here. Let's get to some of these questions before we get out of here. New Breed 211, what's a good quarterback you think the Finns should look at?
I'm gonna
say any quarterback you're gonna look at right now for the Dolphins should be through the draft.
Absolutely.
Wait and see what's after the draft, and if you need to find a veteran guy out there to come in, but I think they should look for a guy that can come in and put some pressure on Ryan Tannehill. And be good enough to where, in the event that Ryan –
can play.
It's a given that Ryan's a starter.
Right.
But you know, based on two knee injuries back-to-back, you know, you've certainly got to be prepared for someone. So I would say some quarterback in there. Baker Mayfield's a guy that keeps popping in my head because he's one of those guys that just seems to win no matter what. He's got a lot of different things he can do. And I don't like the two guys from California anyway. I like the guy from Wyoming a little bit. I haven't seen much of him, but he just seems to have all that – you know, he seems to have all the intangibles and all the size and everything for that. But I just think it's got to be someone that's going to be able to push.
Right.
And it's got to be somebody that, in the event that your starter goes down, he can come in and play and not come in and be a disaster for you.
Well, I think it's Finley at NC State.
Yeah.
You've got Rudolph at Oklahoma State that's going to be around. That, you know, if you don't get that, not a second-tier guy, but not a guy you're going to pick at 11.
Right.
You know, you might be able to get a guy third, fourth, or fifth round who, in addition – two, if you select a guy at 11 or you get a guy in the second or third round. So there's a number of quarterbacks that I think play the role of young, have to step in, but young and get it in a year so that you can push or play that next year.
Yeah. But I think it's kind of consensus out there with anybody that's following this football team, and the consensus are people that cover this football team. You're not hearing much from the staff. But I think the consensus is they've got to me, they got to get a quarterback in the draft. And to me, that quarterback's got to come between round one and round four, is what I've been saying all along. Black Man Game's back.
He's on vacation.
What players will be back next season? Well, it's kind of hard to go over the players will be back next season, but I can tell you the guys that aren't expected back next season. It's not official. Lawrence Timmons, Juwan James didn't get his fifth year extension signed. I think they could still renegotiate with him, bring a number down if they want him. But I think the ascension in the play of
Jesse Davis yeah.
may have put him out of position at right tackle. I think Jesse Davis may be the guy they've got penciled in.
I think that starting right tackle for a long time.
Julius Thomas and Jay Cutler. So those are the guys that aren't here.
May have Fasano retire.
Fasano may retire.
What Anthony's going to do.
I think you're going to see someone. But I'm trying to think of any other guys that are.
Michael Thomas could be a guy.
And look.
Jarvis could be a guy.
Well, that's where I'm going. Here goes. So from Black Man Game comes Steve Santana on Facebook. Hey, Bo, $56 million for Landry. Your thoughts? Well, I read the article from Armando Salguero.
Yeah, I read that as well today
about it, and which I think it's a pretty fair article. But it seems like once that article hit, Jarvis got upset. I mean, and Jarvis, hey, I think the thing was going along pretty smoothly. And then all of a sudden, I think a little hurt feelings maybe in that situation. Now, coming from a writer, you take it with a grain of salt. But I give this: Armando does his work, and I think Armando's pretty good at what he does. I think when I look at Jarvis Landry, to me, I think the number's 10 million to 14 million. I think that's where they're at, kind of in this situation right now. I got to think if you get Jarvis to 12 million, I think you get a deal there.
I do,
and
too.
I think you feel good. So 12 times what? 12 times 4, 48. 48. I don't know that 56 is going to be a number there. I think that's – if it's a four-year deal, look, they could give you $56 million. We'll give you $56 million over the next 15 years.
Right, exactly. Exactly.
But that's certainly not going to be the case.
I think I read that article too, Bo, and I just thought about – there's some good and there's some bad, and then there's some ugly.
Yeah.
And – I just think that a lot of that in there was true. The good was really good.
Yep.
He's been productive. He's been the best player on the team for the majority of the time he's been here with the Miami Dolphins. You can count on him. He's tough.
He's
durable.
Energy.
He'll play hurt. He'll do all those things. And then you take a look at, well, maybe he doesn't do all the things that he's supposed to do.
Right.
Well, sometimes you have that rare athlete, they kind of go off the reservation. But you can't do that and just freelance all the time because it hangs out somebody else. And then it's after the whistle. I don't mind what he does through the whistle.
No.
I just think that after the whistle, there's been some things that you have to question. Now, you don't want to take away. You want to be able to harness what he has and be able to channel that to others and to himself. And do it when it won't hurt the football team.
Yeah.
So I thought there was a lot of validity to what Armando wrote today, and I kind of nodded after I was done reading it. That's basically the story.
Well, look, the last game.
Well, that threw it out of whack. I think that took it over the top.
Yes, I think the other. I think prior to that, it was
it was manageable.
A little rumble over there.
Yeah,
yeah. Jarvis, come on. When you're over in their sideline, get off their sideline.
Right.
Don't stand there and push around, pushing. But that I think. That I think was probably the biggest, light comes on about his contract. Whoa, should we take a harder look at that situation? Because everybody in the organization felt it was very embarrassing.
Right,
it was embarrassing for Jarvis. It was embarrassing for the franchise and the team. So I think that certainly threw that into the spotlight. When it comes to Jarvis.
I just think
when you
take it all together, it's all going to come down to money.
Yeah.
Whether his personality, whether his play after the whistle, whether his production that he's had, which has been great over the last the short period of time he's been a member of the Miami Dolphins, it's all going to come down to, is it 12, is it 13, or is it 14?
Yeah, that's good.
And if it's 12 or 12 and a half or 12, 8 or 13, maybe the Dolphins and Jarvis win. If it's not, Cleveland's going to sign him. Jacksonville will sign him. Somebody else will sign him.
I would just put it to this way: if I had a gun to my head right now and had to bet my house, I'd bet my house that he's back.
Okay.
I just think he's too good of a player. I don't think you want to take that chemistry of that wide receiver room out of there by taking him away, because I think he just sends a bad message. But hey, look, if he doesn't want to be here and the Dolphins give him a good offer and he decides he wants to go somewhere else. I wish him the best of luck, but I would like this team better if Jarvis Landry was on it.
I would, too.
Bill Jackson from Facebook, do you think it's possible to have a disciplined team with Jarvis Landry on? I
yes,
do.
I do.
I do. But it's got to be, you know, it's got to continue to be, they got to continue to stay on Jarvis about it. They got to continue.
Well, I think Jarvis needs to stay on Jarvis about it. I think that's the biggest thing.
That'll he's got to understand that it's not right.
It can't happen.
Yeah, yeah.
It can't happen. I don't care. I've played with great competitors. I've seen great competitors. I've watched them play.
Yep.
At some point, that has to stop because it not only hurts you, it hurts the team.
Yeah.
So that's it's black or white. Stop it. If you continue to do it for somebody else.
Yep. Yep. Anthony Shake Felicio from Facebook. If you can give a good, bad, and ugly award for the Dolphins this season, who would you give it to? Good? I would give good to Kenyon Drake.
Yeah.
Like, I would give good to Rashad Jones.
Absolutely.
There's a number of guys I'd give
good
to. Xavien Howard. Bad?
Jesse Davis I'd give the good to.
I'd give Jesse good. Bad? Ugly? I'd give it to every one of those offensive linemen. Not because they're bad,
because
they're ugly.
Yeah.
And you can't, you know, that
you can't hide that.
That's always good. You mention ugly on a football team, and you start looking right at the offense.
Well, coming from a defensive lineman linebacker, I can see how that happens.
Exactly. I can remember many times coming off the field with A.J. Dewey and Bob Baumhauer and going, man, you see number 66?
Well, he's ugly.
That son of a bitch is ugly, man. We used to play against it. Jess used to have a guy named Gary Pets.
Well, I remember
he was
that
a
name.
Guard, right? Yeah. And Gary, I don't know what he is. He always wore – We would always laugh at him because he always wore a helmet that was too small for his head. And his face mask, now your face mask kind of sits up. His face mask was like right there. It was like his squeeze in his nose.
It was one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I remember the first time I saw him, I didn't even wait to get on the sideline. So I said, bro, did you see this freaking Gary Pets?
He's ugly.
He's an ugly son of a bitch.
We used to give an award to him on the team for
hit him
that.
In his face who's mask and he'll get a bloody nose.
Who was the ugliest player on the team?
Yeah, well. We had
other awards.
Yeah, no doubt. Yes. So that's good. That's ugly. Bad.
Linebacking play.
Bad linebacking play. I would go there. We got to run through these. We only got a couple minutes. The way Marone took control of the Jags sounds like the blueprint for us to bring this one back. I couldn't argue with you. That's from a man called Jay.
Love it.
Facebook, Christopher Dunkley. It'll be interesting to see whether an all-time top defense with an average offense can beat the Patriots. I think their offense is a little. I think their offense is maybe a little better than average.
I think
with their running
game,
they pound you down.
You know,
the only thing that's probably below
average
to me.
Offensive plays through the air are tough to come by.
Yeah, that's
where they're going to fall.
That is. That's the average or below average comes from the quarterback position on that football team. But you can go back to Trent Dilfer with you know an amazing defense can do a lot for you. Duke Dennis, hey Bo, what are some of the things you like to see this team stress on next season? We talked about them. You need to stress discipline. You need to stress you got to cut back your penalties by a minimum of 50%.
Easy.
And you've got to find some way to be in the plus column
in turnover ratio
when it comes to giveaway takeaway.
Yeah, you have to. All the good teams do it.
Those are the basics and to me. The hardest part of those two teams is switching the giveaway takeaway because
it takes everybody. It's just not protecting it.
Yep.
It's finding a way to get your hands on the football on the other side.
El Chapo Jr. Hey, Bo and John.
Chapo's
back. Who's the biggest celebrity you have in your phone contacts right now?
I don't know.
So I mean, I got a lot of football. I got a lot of teammates.
I'd have
and stuff
to peruse.
Like that.
I mean, I've got Leon in here.
Yeah, I got Leon.
I got Leon right under the Logan.
I got Leon. I put Leon. You know, you put your numbers in lists.
I know. I do. Do you?
Yeah. Leon fits under shit list on my phone. So.
I think they want us to rap. I think Logan is screwed up.
That's
going to
be
a rap.
Well, he's Logan, you know, you notice Logan? He pops up now.
He does.
He lightened his head. He lightened him down a little bit.
He's like 2 feet good. On the ground. He's got his back in the chair now. It's great.
All right. That's going to do it for the Audible today.
Thanks, Bo.
John Congemi, Kim Bocamper with you. It was about 40 minutes worth of nothing right there. But it was good nothing.
That's right.
Hope you enjoyed it. We'll catch you next time.